Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the exploration of consciousness, who we are becoming as an evolutionary race, as an evolving species of awakened humans. And we're fortunate at this time to have people who are giving talks, lectures, who have come from a, I would say, more evolved place, a place of awakening. And that's why I'm talking today to Bentino Massaro. Thanks for being here. And what I like about you is that there's no doubt that you are already at an evolved place. You know, not to say you're better than anyone, but you seem to have a wider view. And I think that's what awakening is about. How would you describe your perspective?
Definitely has always felt, since I can remember, that I have a wider view than most people around me. So it would translate into this feeling of everything is possible, and just a sense of clarity and wide openness and spaciousness. And I mean, yeah, there's many things I could say about my perspective. I mean, let's get more specific, maybe.
Well, it's like, okay, I agree there's people coming in with these wider views, but how do you teach that? I mean, you give workshops, you give talks, but is it teachable or is it transmitted somehow?
No, it's definitely teachable. And, you know, I had to do a lot of remembering. I had to do a lot of unlearning. And I guess the advantage that I've had, if anything, is that there is a stronger sense of needing to remember something. But the process of awakening is the same, regardless of where you come from or what your native perspective is, so to speak.
So your process of awakening, I remember you saying somewhere on the tape that 14 or 10, you had this perspective of these other levels of reality. Is that what you, was the beginning of that?
Not even so much, no. I've never been extremely extra-dimensionally oriented necessarily, or even psychically oriented. It's been more of a sort of a down-to-earth desire and a deep yearning of wanting to know the absolute truth, wanting to know the source of all things rather than waste time on one thing in particular. So I really wanted to get down to the core truth behind all things.
So what is that source? What have you discovered as the source?
It's me.
It's you. You being... What do you say, mean by you or me or
yeah? Well, at that level of speech, me is the absolute. Me is God and beyond.
Like me or anyone who is the me is that God.
The innermost sense of me in anyone, if you trace that back far enough, it's kind of like this very long, long tunnel, you know, and reality is out there. Like if you imagine yourself looking through this really long pipe, and it's the absolute that looks through the pipe and that sees the world out here sort of happen. But if you trace that tunnel of that innermost sense of me, which you always have, there's always an experience, or there's that sense of me. You can either be focused externally on what you're experiencing, or you can really get to know the knower itself, really go deeply within. And as you trace that sense of me back in each, throughout each level of consciousness and each level, each configuration of energy or experience, you can always distill the me. It's like constant alchemy. Like out of this equation, out of this vibrational experience, still doesn't matter what form it takes. It can be higher dimensional. It can be more like heaven than earth. It can be more non-physical. But still in that equation, there's two fundamental elements going on, which is you can either be focused on what you're experiencing or on the fact that you're experiencing or who it is that is experiencing.
Right.
So that constantly going within, constantly turning around, inquiring into the who it is that is aware of the equation, it is like going through that tunnel. And if you go follow this deep enough, you will have the amazing realization that you are the absolute. Me is absolute. Not the little me of the bundle of thoughts of me, but...
Because if you follow what you're experiencing, there will always be a reaction to that, a drama, a story. But that, I mean, I really appreciate that perspective. That you are experiencing is the meanness, the thatness.
Yes.
But is that individualized as a me? When you go all the way back there, Do you merge with the collective? Or, and this is a question I've asked many teachers and they have many different answers. Mm-hmm. Is it individualized me? I mean, yes, of course, we're part of the great ocean of being, but does that retain the you-ness of the me?
It depends on how deep you go. The deeper you go, the less of you there will be. Mm-hmm. And the more all that you can say that remains at some point is only the absolute is. And there is nothing else. But, you know, you can speak in more relative terms, and depending on what level we're assuming ourselves to be, or what level we're zoomed into, so to speak, mm-hmm. we will feel individualized to that extent. But the deeper you go, first you go through layers of, like, feeling more authentically who you are as a true individual, mm-hmm. because you're going beyond sort of this shallow ego, the ego of just thoughts, words, labels, descriptions, and you get in touch with this core sense of who you are as an individuated expression of the all, that crystallized pure stream from source. But again, distill further, who is me in this equation? Who is me in this equation? And eventually, like, everything disappears, the world, creation, and there's this indescribable sense of infinite perfection and infinite transcendence.
So are you living on those levels at once? Are you aware of that deep me and also the personality me?
Yeah. I call it true simultaneity.
Uh-huh. So it affects your functioning and being in the world, because basically you're sourcing from that deep me.
Yes.
And so...
So you're playing roles.
Yeah.
After, like, when this realization begins to dawn and begins to marinate in you, begins to mature, you no longer have a life of your own. There's no such sense of having a life of your own. So there's, instead of wanting things or desiring things, there's a detecting benefit, mm-hmm. a natural wisdom, that skillfulness and intelligence that through your body and your mind detects where is the highest benefit to be generated by what form of speech or no speech, thought or no thought, action or no action. And it can look like anything, you know.
Yeah, but was there a point in your experience where that crystallizes, like, oh my God. And is that keep going, that experience? I mean, you don't want to stop
it. It's still going. It's still unfolding. Yeah.
What was the moment where you got that that was the essence of you, sort of? Was there?
Different stages, different ways. I would say the first time, probably around the age of 18.
I'm just always interested in that trigger point where, like, suddenly someone drops into, like, oh my God, this is a bigger picture than I thought.
Okay, well, there's one example I could use. This is about 5 or 6 years ago. At that point, I had been teaching about this field of consciousness that we all are. And I was teaching people something similar, but I was teaching them to relax back into the sense of presence awareness. But something happened at some point, which I had no exposure to in the teachings or communities around me. It was kind of a unique dawning. And so it confused me for a little while. I was just observing it happen. But basically what happened is that this sense of pure being that we generally try to get to, you know, awakening, enlightenment is like, is typically, at least in mainstream, it's about getting to this sense of presence awareness and this non-identified space of pure consciousness. But what started to happen is this weird sensation. It's not really a sensation, but it's very difficult to describe, but it's like the sense of being itself started to become an object instead of being the subject.
A sense. You had an object being a sensation?
Yeah, so my sense of being consciousness became, it's like it popped out of me and suddenly consciousness itself appeared in front of me. Like the field of consciousness itself, the subject itself turned into an object, became another appearance. And it came with a sense of, I'm tired of being, I'm tired of presence, I'm tired of consciousness. So what then dawned on me, or what revealed itself to me, is something that was more profound than that, something older than God.
Older than God.
Something older than.
I think I'll call this video Older Than God.
Nice.
what can you give a sense of what that means? Because, I mean, I don't know what people's definition of God is, but it is. But,
so yeah. I would say God is the creation, the creator aspect of the one absolute. So as I see it from the one infinite absolute, indescribable, the first distortion or expression that arose from that is awareness. Mm-hmm. From awareness then arose this field of love, because in that state, it still knows that it's only one. So any manifestation out of that realization of oneness would be this field of love. Mm-hmm. This field of love is formless. After some time in timelessness, this awareness, this intelligence, this free agency, this God will generate, out of this field of formless love, it will start to generate patterns. Mm-hmm. And this is what we call light. So I see awareness, love, and light as the three only ingredients. Mm-hmm. Or you could roughly translate that to Satchitananda, if you're familiar with the Sanskrit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's this ocean of awareness, love, light, out of which everything projects itself as form, as mm-hmm. creation, as experience, and all the different densities come into being and all that. So I would say that's God, that field mm-hmm. of the Creator from which things are projected and created, in back into which things...
So the projector is sort of God, that we're the source, but you're saying older than that is...
Older than that is something that cannot be described. It's beyond consciousness, it's beyond experiencing, it's beyond perception. But when it's realized, it makes typical enlightenment look like nothing. Mm. It's this indescribable. It's not even a sense, it's you're waking up to the actual absolute. And the experience can be described as, it is as if you pop out of creation itself, not just the personal ego, but all of creation with all the dimensions, all the densities. It's like you graduate from that. It's like a complete homecoming back into the source before anything was ever created.
Yeah, I think the Kabbalah calls that the Ein Sof, the beyond knowledge, the place of pure being, as if you've studied Kabbalah at all.
I have not, no.
Okay. But that place is something, of course, we all have, but it's like, is that still coming and going for you, or are you there on that, whatever level you're there?
Uh-huh. So the conscious mind's focus can come or go, but what I am is that. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no coming and going of the absolute.
So the difference between you is that you know that, and most people are still trying to find that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess.
Would you say?
Mm-hmm.
But what I love about your teaching and work is that you speak to a sort of millennial crowd that, in a way, doesn't have the baggage of old spirituality or religion. Of course, they're also missing a bit of tradition you're bringing to them, but speak to the fact that somehow that generation seems wide open to something new.
Yeah.
What do you notice?
So I would say that so we're stepping it down to a relative level, which
course.
Is great. I'm totally open to that.
No, we'll go back to that a little
bit. Anyway, this is your interview.
Curious.
I'm just here.
No.
yes, absolutely. So the millennials, or the new generation, obviously what's relevant for them is to figure out not so much what they are absolutely speaking, although that can never hurt, but more who they are, why they're here. What is their unique theme and blueprint and expression and gift to this world at this timing? Because we can observe within this relative creation and this timing on Earth, we can observe that there is a transition happening, and it's happening fast. And in order to facilitate that change, there is a whole wave of wanderers, if you will, old souls that are coming in to assist in this process. Mm-hmm. Which is what I think you're referring to a little bit.
Yeah, and they seem really fresh, but they lack, maybe that's my own problem, they lack a historical context for a spiritual awakening, in a sense, which is okay. We can throw that out. But
Right. Well, eventually, that will, in a sense, catch up with them. Mm-hmm. If it truly is an imbalance, it will catch up with them, and they'll learn that later on, inevitably.
Mm-hmm. So the relationship between the relative, like where we're actually awakening to something, and the absolute, which is always and forever is, how do you see the progression of the timeline sequences with the awakening of consciousness in relationship to the absolute? Is that something being directed, or is it just unfolding?
Yeah. If you picture a black hole, out of which creation emerges as well as coalesces back into, you could see the entire creation as that. If you want to visualize the Big Bang, for example, mm-hmm. the expansion of the universe, then reaching sort of the farthest edges of evolution, the most crystallized mm-hmm. way. And let me back up for a sec. The main intention of this creation being for the one original infinite creator to be able to know itself. Mm-hmm. Because in its original state, it doesn't know itself. Mm-hmm. It's stateless. It's absolutely stateless. So it needs the illusion of other. It needs the illusion of manifestation. It needs the illusion of evolution, of individuation, of experience and catalyst to, through that process, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. It's like the absolute entering into a dream, and then the dream begins to evolve and evolve. Mm-hmm. And the dream becomes more and more lucid and more lucid. And then the shift into the absolute could be compared to, instead of being super lucid inside the dream, mm-hmm. actually waking up, the dream disappears, and you know what you are.
Right.
So that would be the analogy of the entire creation reaching a sufficient spiritual mass or realization mm-hmm. to where it coalesces back into the black hole. Mm-hmm. And on the other end of that black hole, so to speak, mm-hmm. is me, you, it.
And that's the formless, that's the foreverness of being. But it also seems there's something else going on. I mean, I don't know from my relative point, but I had a teacher who said, we're here to make known the unknown. So creation is here to know itself, but it doesn't know what it doesn't know, just like we don't know. So as we become creative beings and spark more access to unknown potential, we're adding to creation. Mm-hmm. And so, in a way, the universe is yet to be created. Mm. And the potentiality is still growing into unknown possibilities.
Absolutely, yeah.
So,
well, how does something infinite express itself? It has to be in infinite ways. Mm. So there's no end to the expression. There's no end to the dream. Mm-hmm. After a dream coalesces back into the one absolute, it reemerges after an unimaginable time spent in timelessness, where consciousness is in abeyance back into source. Another universe is generated with everything being learned, being re-implemented in a new way. So that never ends. The expression of what's infinite never ends because the expression has to be infinite.
Right, so it's growing every minute, in a sense.
You could say that. Yeah.
Because I guess I came from an old way of thinking, like, oh yeah, the universe is just sort of remembering what it already knew, or God, whatever you want to call it. But yet it seems with the creative force, no, I can create something that had never existed before, even in the mind of God or wherever. Mm. Maybe it did. But I'm mm-hmm. saying as we, I think you use the term flower into our humanity, the creative expression becomes alive. And we add to creation in unknown ways.
Absolutely. And even if we're not aware, we do that inevitably. Mm-hmm. Every second that we experience is the creator having another experience of mm-hmm. itself through these little portals that we call me.
So let's talk about this exciting time we're in,
cool.
where we are pulling in the new creation. People
yes.
are waking up. And we'll get to the ET stuff because that's one of my passions. But just before we get there, how do you see this moment in time of awakening? And you talk about 2030, 2035. So, yeah, the relative creation is going somewhere. What do you see?
So in my terminology and understanding, I would describe it as we are moving collectively from a third density vibratory state to a fourth density vibratory state. So this is slightly different than the dimensions as a lot of people talk about it. I prefer the system of the densities because I think it's more accurate. It has less room for misinterpretation. It's just very clear. This is based, or I was exposed to this first in the Law of One.
Uh-huh. Raw material, yes.
Yes. So fourth density being the vibration of love, transparency, union between beings, interconnectedness, sharing surface. And so we are moving from a very isolated, all about me kind of paradigm, which is reflected in our corporations and our structures and our architecture throughout. And this is kind of what's crumbling and disappearing and making way, being forced upon itself, a level, a heightened density, which forces us to become transparent and awake.
Right.
So we're kind of catching up with planet Earth, which is who is already entered into this fourth density vibration several decades ago. Mm-hmm. And what we see today is this this forced shift of us trying to figure out how to catch the train is leaving, and one arm is left on the station for a lot of people, but we want to catch this train, and you know, everything will change with this, like it's inevitable, everything will change. I use 2035 mm-hmm. as a date because I feel that that will be roughly the period where we can say that pretty much all systems have changed and been overthrown, and this closure.
Did you get that as a download?
You could say that, yeah.
As a vision possibility? Mm. Yeah. Okay.
And there's variation in that. There's different timelines, obviously, mm-hmm. so or not so obviously, but there are different timelines. So it depends on each individual what they'll experience, but mm-hmm. roughly for the crowd that I speak to most of the time, I estimate that around 2035, we can really look back and say we are in a different world, and mm-hmm. we are no longer just earthly. There's
a galactic awareness.
There's a galactic awareness and relationships that are starting, an absorption, an intergalactic absorption that begins, as well as our structures falling away and our power structures disappearing and all that.
Right, and free energy and all the things that we need to be a really evolving civilization.
Yep, and some of these things will start to happen very soon.
Yeah.
But around 2035, we could really begin to see that this is, like, we've made it, so to speak, hopefully.
No, I think I'm on that timeline, hopefully. Yeah. But, you know, I'm very involved in the disclosure movement. Mm. I helped the Contact in the Desert experience. I mean, I've interviewed all those people, going back to Bud Hopkins and John Mack, if you know those people. Do you know those people? John Mack was a psychiatrist at Harvard, started to interview people having ET experience and said, no, these people are not crazy. They're having an experience that can't be qualified in our sense of reality.
Nice.
And that opened up a real official way of understanding that what we're meeting, if we want to get into the ET stuff, is nothing we know in terms of human consciousness. Hmm. And that's been my experience in my content. It is, and you've talked about how, yeah, even though you're prepared, it still is a little freaky when they show up at your door, right? So let's talk about what we need to do to prepare, because disclosures happen. I mean, there's stuff in the sky all the time, and there's people having vision and interaction. So what do we need to do as a human race, we're not totally human, to meet the other and embrace us? We need an internal shift and a different level of vibration. Hmm. And talk about what you see. Hmm.
The most important thing, like we could get into fancy stuff, but the rudimentary basics that people will have to understand and have to integrate first is the capacity to handle this transparency of consciousness that pervades.
What do you mean by transparency?
So let me go back to the densities real quick. Mm-hmm. What does density mean? Density means how densely packed each, if you will, cubic square inch of the particular illusory environment that we find ourselves in.
The vibration of
light. Packed with light.
This, yeah.
Yeah, like how much of God's light is squeezed consciously, so to speak, mm-hmm. into each aspect of this environment, right? So as the dreamscape that you could call life, as most people see it as matter or as the physical universe, but really it's a dreamscape mm-hmm. In consciousness. The higher the vibration of that, the denser it is with that light of consciousness. So, like I was saying earlier, planet Earth has been already shifted into what could be categorized as a fourth density vibratory state where it's all about love and transparency. Mm-hmm. Now, by transparency, like you have to apply this across the board. Transparency, I don't just mean being able to share something with someone when you're feeling it. That's an aspect of it. That's a very
relational. That's a basic emotional drama aspect of trans, which is important. You need to do that.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's totally important.
Oh, wait, sorry. Okay. Yeah, I was looking
Shall
at
I
that.
Take it off?
No, that's not
up against your, thanks. Okay.
So there was a little bit of, rubbing during that last exchange, if you want to.
Just rubbing. That's better. Okay, great. That's pretty good. Are we seeing? Actually, it'd be nice if we didn't see. If you get more, yeah. I mean, a little bit like that.
Sure.
So, you know where you were, right?
I think so.
You. That's okay. We're just playing. Feel free to make jokes.
Nice.
You know.
He's smiling through almost everything.
I know. He's a great smile. That he's projecting some kind of, you know, enjoyment.
Wait, you know the person's right when they have a smile like that.
Can you just check if someone's out there wants to come in? Okay. Let me just get. How are we doing on time? How many?
We have two cards, so it's not an issue.
Yeah, okay.
We've been shooting.
Anyone out there? No? Okay, great.
25.
Okay, great. And you can. So you're saying density.
So to be transparent with others is definitely a very important aspect of that. But you have to see this transparency thing across the board. Like, it is like everything is obscured from each other currently, or it's becoming less and less so, but everyone is in their own bubble, in their own veil. This applies to corporation, hierarchical structures, government, our relationships, our own feelings from ourselves to ourselves. There's a mm-hmm. lot of veils. These veils are being busted wide open, whether we like it or not, whether we're ready or not.
The Weinstein effect is busting a lot of people nice. Open, you know? But anyway, go ahead. Yes. Yeah, so.
So it's like suddenly people will be able to see each other's like true intentions and feelings and emotions and understand why they're here more clearly and see through the lies and the deceit. So what's being forced upon our planet is this transparency. And I think, again, like I said, we can get into the fancy stuff too, or, you know,
like when you say fancy stuff, what do you mean?
You know, we want to talk about spaceships or like, you know, whatever new money systems or, but what's most important to understand for everyone is that we have to integrate within ourselves these different levels of our consciousness, because otherwise we won't be able to successfully integrate the experiences that are happening anyway.
We won't be able to meet the other if we still have stuff veiled in ourselves.
Exactly. It would cause a disruption of our cohesion, our sense of cohesion, because mm-hmm. it's like someone being exposed to shock or a war or right. similar to that. If you're exposed to too much love, mm-hmm. it can cause PTSD. If you're not ready for that vibration. And mm-hmm. so if there's too much telepathy, too much transparency, and you're afraid, you're mm-hmm. fundamentally afraid because you're identified with the small self and it hasn't mm-hmm. been integrated, and there is a lack of transparency and mastery within one's own field, then that field will go into a shock state.
Right. That's that, because we've been so stuck in our human drama and our story and our veiled lives that when we're confronted with something that blows that away, we freak out because we've identified with that. Is that mm-hmm. what you're saying? So mm-hmm. so how do you suggest we meet the galactic other? I mean,
to do the work. I mean, there's no other way. We have to do the work. We have to observe ourselves, get to know ourselves. As Ra states, the mm-hmm. first step is to know oneself. Know your patterns. Know why you react the way you react. Why are you feeling what you're feeling? Become aware of your patterns, your addictions, your mm-hmm. your lack beliefs. Mm-hmm. And through that knowledge, then accept yourself. Step two is accept yourself. First step is know yourself. Second step is accept yourself. And only when you do that, there's a healing, there's an integration that happens with all these elements mm-hmm. that you bring transparency to. Only then can step three be begun, and that is really the spiritual path, which is become the creator.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, to become the creator?
It depends on what level we're talking about it, but it mm-hmm. simply means to begin the ascension process of really looking up, if you will, looking up towards what's possible, looking up to your true self, looking inward towards your true self, and becoming more of the creator and emptying oneself of all these false ideas and false mm-hmm. sense of self.
I get that, and I think that's great. But, you know, and I'm really happy we're talking about this, because I talk to a lot of spiritual teachers, and I bring up the idea of ET realities or whatever. And they say, look, you don't need to go there. Why, you know, bring that in? This doesn't have anything to do with spirituality. But I think it does, and I think you have a key to why it does. Mm.
Well, know? A lot of these beings, and I can't vouch for all civilizations, but a lot of these beings come from a higher density. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole, you know, there's this whole alliance, there's multiple alliances that are available as guides, as mm-hmm. space holders that have traversed this path that we have through the densities mm-hmm. that are resonating at a higher frequency natively right. and that are able to guide us and help us. So it's not that aliens per se are you know, define what spirituality is, but it's that they are beings just like us, some of which have traversed through these higher densities, and they know these lessons, they know how to handle this process. And their perception and their energy and their consciousness is just so much more capable of perceiving these processes that it will be helpful to without surrendering sovereignty,
right,
to appreciate those teachers and those guides, mm-hmm, and to pay attention and to be ready for that to begin with.
Well, you're sort of from there. I mean, on a relative, right, level, a more...
Yes, I'm in disguise.
Yeah, tell us about where, I mean, not that it matters, but where, yeah, you, what do you resonate with as far as like what level of or where beings, mm-hmm, are from?
I'll just say that natively, if I had to categorize it, I would say it's a late sixth density vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people want to really get familiar with that frequency, I recommend reading The Law of One Material, mm-hmm, Ra being a late sixth density entity. Mm-hmm.
So as these beings start to show up first telepathically or in our thought form realities, what do you suggest? How do we welcome that in? Because most of the time people are recirculating their own stuff. And suddenly they get a thought, they go, nah. And how do we start to integrate the frequencies of density of thought that will awaken the new neuronets nets of possibility?
Honestly, the shortcut to all your questions,
yes,
in terms of how, any how question when it comes to spirituality,
shortcut,
is the extremely intense desire for truth, freedom, liberation, purity, however you want to call it, realization. All problems, all obstacles arise when the desire is not extreme enough. When the desire
not for, extreme enough,
not intense enough. Yes,
we need desire.
If we don't have a desire for freedom, for liberation, for truth, then all obstacles appear. Mm-hmm. When you have intense desire, all obstacles disappear, and the way shows itself.
That's different than the Buddhist state that says, you know, desire is a source of all suffering.
Yes, I think it's a bit of a misinterpretation.
Okay, but anyway, let's go back to what you're saying because I like that better.
Yeah, this is the only desire that will guarantee to take you out of all lesser desires, mm-hmm, so to speak. A very simple example of this is that, let's say that, you know, you're afraid to ask directions, and mm-hmm, so, you know, you have to go, you have to get somewhere, you have to get to a museum, but you're so afraid that you don't want to ask, mm-hmm, someone for directions, as simple as that. People have that level of anxiety. So that's because the desire to get to the museum isn't big enough. That's the only reason the obstacle arises. Because if you have your own child in the car and he needs to go to a hospital ASAP or he dies, mm-hmm, you don't even think about your fears. You'll ask for directions, mm-hmm, to the hospital because your desire to get to the hospital is big enough. All obstacles disappear. There is no question of how. You just know. You just do it. The same applies with integrating these levels of our consciousness, becoming ready and fit for contact, self-realization, enlightenment, awakening, ascension. Any of these how questions are really coming from a state of being filled with excuses because we don't really want what we say we want.
So if we're asking how, it's just
we
like...
We don't want it.
I get that. Thank you.
Sometimes, like lately, I've been saying to my audience, sometimes you guys literally are abusing me here. You're using me because you know the work, you know the teachings, you don't really want to get there.
You're an excuse for not.
So I need to answer these questions. I need to answer you consistently how, because really you don't want it. If you wanted it, if you got it, if you wanted it, you wouldn't be asking these questions. Like, because you would be doing it. You'd be becoming it.
Mm-hmm.
It's innate knowledge. It's intuitively innate to all of us. The path always reveals itself if the desire is extremely present.
Mm.
But we want so many different things, right, laterally that vertical ascension line remains largely unavailable to most people.
That's great, because I totally agree. If I'm asking, oh, tell me how,
And the Buddha had an extreme desire for liberation.
And
that's how he got to the realization that, you know, life is suffering and that, mm-hmm, there is a way out and that desires will cause more suffering.
But you're here in the manifest world. Mm-hmm. I mean, here you are, physical.
If you say so.
You seem to be pretty physically.
In your world, yeah.
In my reality, yes. So is there anything that you want? Because you're here maybe to help lift up other people, mm-hmm, but maybe that's part of your
Yeah, wants. My only remaining desire is naturally to be of service. And it doesn't even feel like a choice. It's just like I was saying, I described this difference between a personal consciousness, a shepherding consciousness, and finally a mirroring consciousness. So the sage, if you
Wait,
will.
Go through that.
So the personal consciousness?
Yes.
You know, the majority of people are identified with and express themselves
me,
as
me, my story, and my history.
Yes, and it's very much about me, and it's very much surrounding me. It's like a bubble around your head. Like, literally, I see bubbles around people's heads.
Do you see that now?
I see that.
Do I have a
not
bubble?
Not physically.
But sensing.
Well, everyone has a bubble.
Like a story bubble. Like a little...
Like the bubble of the assumption of who they believe and feel they are that is uninvestigated. Every time you turn back inwards and ask yourself, who am I really? And you distill, you do that alchemy process, you pop that bubble and you enter a truer bubble, and it becomes thinner and thinner. That veil that seems to separate you from God or the Absolute thins out every time you do this investigation. So it's literally a process of emptying out. So people go, when they do this process of self-realization or self-inquiry, they go from a personal consciousness to what I call a shepherding consciousness, which is a fairly wide range, I would say, fourth through sixth, late sixth density is a shepherding consciousness.
And how does that matter? How do you work with that?
Yeah. Shepherding consciousness, my definition of that would be where it's no longer just about you. And it depends on which level we're talking to, but at some point you realize that the spiritual journey, it's not just about you. And in fact, to make more progress faster, you now need to include service to others. That is what will polarize you quicker, accelerate you quicker, charge you up quicker, make you realize quicker. So as we begin to really embrace the fact that we are the collective and we're not just one physical body, we are the all, our priorities start shifting. Our desires start shifting. This is when we become a shepherding consciousness, when the majority of our focus is no longer about what can I get, what can I maintain, what I can secure for myself. It's not no longer fear-driven, it's love-driven and service-to-others-driven. That's that shepherding consciousness. Now, the shepherd at a certain stage can tap into an even more profound freedom or emptiness of self, which will result in what I call mirroring consciousness. At that point, it's like there's no one driving the bus. It's like you're completely empty, and what you call the body and the mind sort of appears on the periphery of your sense of awareness, but it's hard. You can't call it real. It's extremely dreamlike. It's empty of anything that you want.
Do you live in this state?
Correct.
I mean, yeah.
Yes. And so what then happens is that your physical, mental, emotional, spiritual bodies, they become mirrors. And so naturally, they detect benefit with clear intelligence. Mm-hmm. And this can look like anything. Yeah. To an ordinary person, I may look like an asshole sometimes in the way that I express myself. But that is driven by an intelligence there is no I to argue with that. It is super precise. It's incredible. I wish I could put it on film for people to see how this operates, but it's very difficult to do. it would have to be able to track what's going on within the vehicles or the bodies simultaneously, what is happening outside and what the calling is and the vibrations of others. And
we should do an animation of that or the multiple screens.
That'd be cool.
So anyway, so that consciousness is just totally non-personal at all.
Yes. And so from that state, I say to you that I don't want anything. The only thing that remains is a natural service to others, no matter what that takes, no matter what that looks like.
But as a service of that, you've incarnated into this form for a particular purpose, in a sense.
Yeah. So there's a few particular purposes.
What would you say? I'm just curious.
One is very potently to be of service to others, to distill some of the main traditions and the key teachings into ways that people will be able to relate to and understand. It is to model a certain degree of paradox and rebellion and purity at the same time. Mm. You know, like I posted this picture the other day of...
you with some Playboy bunnies.
Yeah, these two, actually.
Oh, those lovely.
Yeah, so that it was my Halloween outfit, and of course I know people are gonna,
you've objectified women.
Women, and you shouldn't endorse Hugh Hefner, and he abused people, and whatever.
And women shouldn't be objectified, right? So anyway, yes.
So, and then other posts of mine are speaking to the purity of all of existence and how my only purpose is to love on all people.
So what do you say to people say, oh, you're just you know, doing the same thing all those guys have done to women? What? How do you respond?
It depends on what arises. Like, depends on what the mirror shows. Sometimes I go into it. Sometimes I don't go into it.
Right.
It depends. Sometimes I'm nice. Sometimes I'm rude. I can't take any kind. But you'll see that people will project onto me that I have certain feelings and emotions and triggers and desires. Right. So it's interesting to, and it's no longer even interesting, but it used to be a fascinating journey to really to see the remnants of where I still care about that. Mm. And to have gotten out of that, and now it's just natural and fun and beneficial. Yeah.
So they're projecting all their stuff onto whatever it is.
It's for a lot of people, it's just really not possible at this stage to understand the state I come from. And so it makes sense that if you look in a mirror, you see yourself. Mm. But when you see yourself and it looks like my body, then obviously you think it's me, not you, right. Just because this is my body. And I do what I do, but it's happening in your world. Mm. And so it's an interesting state to live as a mirror, because things don't apply to you in the same way.
But you do have fun, I mean, as an individuated consciousness.
Only when it's beneficial, yeah.
But you go out, I mean, you hang out, you meet, have friends.
Which again is part and parcel of the example of being a balanced, or like a mismatch almost, but a balance of paradox, so that people can't pin these teachings down to the traditional path of this is what it looks like, purity, loincloth, or vegetarian, or it looks like rebellion and like grossness and physicality. But to have a blend of all these in my expression, even that's not for me. Even fun is not for me.
Fun is not for you.
No, it's for the collective. So whatever I model, whatever I show, is because that animates through me, and I honor that by... Even to say I honor it would imply that I can either honor it or not honor
There's
it.
There's an I to, yeah.
Yes, so, but it's very rare for me to have that sort of me feeling arise and control what's happening. It's very rare at this stage.
But, yeah, but you're in the world too. I mean,
I'm in people's worlds.
Yeah, but you're in your world. I mean, when you're by yourself in your own sense of beingness,
yes.
Does nothing arise, or do, I mean... In the outside world, they may not influence you, but just curious, what arises in that state?
In that state itself, nothing arises, but on the periphery, what arises is whatever is next, whatever is relevant, whatever needs
like
to be accomplished or created. It could be me writing a post, it could be me becoming aware of like a really subtle energy dynamic or a paradox, it could be being aware of a parallel reality, it could be me interacting with someone close to me. It could be me just being completely silent and no processes are happening whatsoever. There's just absolute bliss.
But isn't absolute bliss, but isn't beyond that even there's like a feeling, like a sense of not even compassion, but joyful identification that comes through the embodiment, like
I'll have bouts of weirdness or silliness. You know, I can, one moment I can be like completely, like seemingly non-existent, like there's just this field of infinity, and there's no person. And then suddenly, for whatever reason, usually if I'm with other people, though, which again is because of that reflective thing, but I'll be like an energy will come through the body and it will animate it, or like I'll be super silly for like an hour. Or like I'll start like having Tourette's or something like that, you know.
Let's
see. So there is weird, you know,
one of those things.
Yeah, there is weird things that happen.
Yeah, like
playful things. There's playfulness.
Yeah,
as a part of the expression. Yes.
I mean, it does seem like a new thing. So many people are stuck in an Advaita non-dual, but you're like going beyond that model even.
Well, it's to not be able to be pinned down in any form. You know, like the formless doesn't have any form of its own. It can express as anything. And part of my blueprint for this incarnation is to allow for a high degree of variability within my expression so that people will never be able to say what I was and what I am. Because
but if they say it, they could. And it's
they could.
That's their...
Yes, but if the people that are sincere and that they study my life and my work, they'll end up not understanding, not being able to categorize, and thus then that's a great teaching, that's a great awakening.
But you're evolving as well. I mean, whatever. I mean, there's more.
So that would be the third aspect of my incarnation, I would say. So the first would be service to others in the form of being an articulate teacher that is able to distill different paths and help people wherever they're at on the journey. Leave something both for mainstream as well as for the wanderers, the seekers, the adepts that really want these higher, finer knowledges. Second would be to be an expression of freedom, rebellion, integration, balance, weirdness, whatever it might be, however it shows up. And third would be my own evolution.
Yeah, talk about that.
Adding to my native level, which only entered into being really a few years ago. Mm-hmm. That became more prominent as I started, you know, as I undid a lot of these knots, those sort of man-made, created ego knots and programming. I reached a certain level where now the journey started to include that third element, which is that more deliberately, I am able to, from a native state of where I come from before this life, grow using this life. So, example of that would be that, like my native state, I would describe as a high or late sixth density state, which is still individuated. There's still a soul, a sense of an I am.
And a separateness in form anyway, yeah.
Yes, so well, it's deeply suffused with an awareness and understanding of oneness at that level. Like there's a great sense of unity. It's like you're flooded with light and union and oneness. But it is still understood from the vantage point of an individuated self. Even though that's a group consciousness.
Right. You're still looking out of those eyes, you're saying.
You could say it in that way, but we're talking a totally non-physical
reality. Yeah, we're talking about
reality,
expanded, yeah.
Group consciousness identity.
Okay.
So it's not so much through the eyes, but I get what you're
saying. I get what you're saying,
yeah, through a self, you could say. It's filtered through...
The expandedness of being.
Yes.
Okay.
As Ra states in the book, for example, is still we are Ra. Even at our stage of evolution, knowing the Creator as clearly as we do, knowing that all is one, still to this date, we are Ra. There still is identity left, a sense of memory, a sense of... And a lot of beings hold themselves at a high sixth density state to be able to still maintain individuated thought so that they can teach and be of service to creation. So that threshold between sixth and seventh density is kind of the threshold between looking at creation and the different evolutions and the past timelines of the past selves, functioning as a higher self to our previous selves, being available to creation, to the calling for help and support and clarity from beings of all kinds of civilizations. And seventh density being the really the turning away from creation or manifestation to the Creator itself. And at the expense of individuated thought, at the expense of memory, at the expense of individual nature. And so in seventh density, that's the journey to really becoming the awareness of all that is and losing oneself in the process.
That's your next step.
That's what's been marinating more recently for me. And then eighth density would be where the ocean of allness disappears back into the one original, infinite, indescribable perfection, absolutely devoid of manifestation of any kind.
And do you think out of that ocean there becomes an individuation as an expression of the ocean, like a Jesus or a Buddha, where they, even though you are individuated, you're not, that's the illusion, or maybe that's what you're calling sixth density.
At that state, the being is the Creator, meaning it's the most humble servant you can imagine. And the most humble servant means it can look very arrogant. It can look whatever way. It can look very loving. It can look very this. It's so humble that it no longer maintains individuated thought. It is completely run by infinite intelligence. Right. The biases have been cleared. There is no sense of wanting from this world.
Are people getting this, at least what you're saying, sixth density? When you're in your groups, you know, you're talking and they're... or is there still so much? I mean, I guess for some people there is. But do you find that a few people are... Are the light bulb is going on?
Yes. They recognize at deep levels what I'm speaking of.
And do you think this in 2035, there's this mass awakening where the collective will get, is that what you're saying?
No.
It's okay if they don't, they don't.
No, when I say a happy planet or an awakened civilization by 2035, I mean that relatively speaking.
Okay.
I don't mean we're all going to be like Buddha or Krishna. That's not in our books. That's not relevant in this density. So there will be wanderers, which is the dual side of my task of teaching is one is to deliver something to the masses mm-hmm. of each level. I'm actually wanting to create a school that follows these densities at this point.
Nice.
So that whoever you are, whether you want to just learn how to clear your beliefs and manifest dimension, or you want to know who you are at the soul level and why you came here and what's most appropriate for you to be of service to, or you want to become a complete mirror sage and realize that there is no individual I and merge with all that is, or you want to realize the one infinite absolute beyond that, that there's an inclusive school for people of all levels there with facilitation and classes and understandings that is delivered. Because mm-hmm. if you look at anything in our society, for any other field, we have a structured school. You don't go tell your kid when they're 4 years old. It's really important that you learn math, but I have no clue where you can learn it. Just go to India for 6 months. Go find whatever books you can find, maybe, possibly. You know, we send them to school because that's where you learn everything.
Yeah.
With spirituality, there's so much waste of time and energy and seeking expenditure because...
And dogmas from the past.
And dogmas from the past, exactly.
Yeah.
So there is no clear, modern, universally, cosmically backed up school system for spirituality. It's all, as I see spirituality on Earth, it's in need of a massive upgrade, and it's largely culture. Mm-hmm. What we call spirituality is largely cultural expressions of the mystical. But nothing wrong with that. There's beautiful mystical traditions and cultures. But it is culturally tainted, meaning it's not clear science. It's not the science of spirituality.
Yeah.
It's not backed up usually by the way that the ETs and the higher levels actually all correspond with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to create a school that allows for that entire progression so that people, regardless of where they're at, if they suddenly feel the desire to go to a higher density understanding, they can do that. And that school is totally honoring of wherever they're at. Mm-hmm.
The problem with spirituality, even on that level, is that people judge themselves. If they want to play in a lower density, they judge themselves. They say, I should be here.
Exactly.
And
So that's something that... somehow I want to be implicit in that school that does not happen as much as possible.
Yeah, because we have to indulge our desires, like you say.
Yeah, you can't suppress them.
Yeah.
You have to...
So it's okay to play in...
Oh, it's totally okay to play. And there's a difference between believing you need things or want things and crave things and play. Like, mm-hmm. in fact, you can only really play when you're already a little much more, when you're already more free from the biases and the wants mm-hmm. and the needs and the lack beliefs that you grew up with. So there's a difference between the state of wanting things mm-hmm. or being playful. Like mm-hmm. playful is already a freer state. I wouldn't term it in the same way. Mm-hmm. Definitely playfulness is relevant for where we're at and where we're going.
Would you say the ETs that you've met that are on playing in the, and how, I mean, if you want to relate something about like their level of interaction.
Yes, the ones that I'm connected to the most internally are of higher densities. And so playfulness there is very different to a lot of human beings. It would look very robotic and it doesn't feel robotic, but from the outside in, when you don't have the vibration to back it up,
mm-hmm.
it would seem so like precise and accurate and mathematical and balanced that it seems like these beings have no fun. But they know the pain of fun as we have it, and they know the bliss and the joy of that heightened supreme balance that they've attained. And in that, there lies that love and that joy, which cannot be compared to what we call fun in our veiled state. What we call fun is simply relief from suppression. Usually, it's relief from believing we're limited. If you have an unlimited view or a near unlimited view, so suffused with love, light, and unity, you would look different at fun. Mm. Like you would be at bliss. So there wouldn't be that like, let's just have fun. Why are we so serious?
Yeah, let's have some beers and watch the ball game.
Right. It just doesn't arise there. But there's no judgment of that from that state either. It's just that it's such an evolved state that it. The concept of fun is different, but there's still humor. These levels, there's still humor.
The ETs, or what, I don't know what they are, but I get the sense of beings that exist in color forms and colors that, and the interaction of different layers of color and the coming together of different strands is a sort of a creative exchange mm-hmm. that, I don't know where I get that from, but that's a kind of sense that's...
Nice.
Okay.
Sounds very fourth and fifth density.
Yeah, I love the fourth and fifth density.
That's good.
I like to play in creation.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah. So, but there is a time coming to the planet, as you see, that will rise up out of the political dramas, the dramas of war, of hate, of prejudice, killing, all these things that are, really stopped humanity. I mean, that just gets us to an even playing field. It gets us to where we're supposed to be living from when we get there, so we can create from there. What does the world look like on the fourth density? How do relationships look?
Wonderful, playful, loving, transparent, honest, true, integrity, alignment. All the basic ingredients you need to thrive as a civilization, as a group.
But still sensual, still physical, still...
In our lifetime, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But we're going away from that.
I mean, late fourth density would become more non-physical. Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason we're embodied, though, too, right? I mean, there's a...
Yes.
What would you say?
Like, I often get this, you know, some questioner will rise up in the audience, especially if they haven't been to my meeting so much, and they'll say something like, at the other retreat I gave a few weeks ago, someone said, but aren't we here to experience the flesh?
Yeah.
You know, like, often get that response. And no.
You say no,
we're not. No, we're not. That's not the main intention. Mm-hmm. I feel that's a human distortion, and it's a fear projection onto the higher levels of losing what currently gives you relief. Mm-hmm. But when you actually integrate those higher levels, you understand that the reason for being here is not to enjoy the flesh necessarily. That just sort of comes along with the package. Mm-hmm. But that's not the pre-incarnative intention for most people. There may be exceptions where the life is about exploring that particularly. Mm-hmm. But for most people at this timing on Earth that incarnate here, the intention behind incarnating is not to enjoy the flesh. It's not to smell a flower. It's not to taste food. Those are just natural results. They come with the package. But it is to learn, to share, to expand, to grow rapidly. To be under rapid fire of catalyst and challenge and to wake up as much as we can. Mm. That is the joy. That is the expansion. That's the usefulness of this short lifespan, this artificially shortened lifespan of the human physical entity. Mm. And so you'll see that if someone thinks this is all about the flesh and it's about experiencing the flesh.
Very third density. It's okay. I'm not judging it.
And it is okay. It's just that when you die, you'll see, you'll kind of go like lovingly, okay. I see I kind of missed out on what I really came here to be. Mm-hmm. So I generally don't recommend people using that as a cop-out. Like, we're here to experience. I go to nice dinners. You know, I enjoy a cigar and a good whiskey and a good conversation. And
we should have had an interview
over
there.
Yeah. Occasionally, I enjoy playing video games, watching movies. And so there is that which comes with this dreamscape that we're in, but it shouldn't become a reason for putting your attention on it all the time. Mm-hmm. It just happens. It's just natural relief and balance and joy and fun. Mm-hmm. The ideal attention span is rested in the question, why am I really here? Mm-hmm. And you'll find that 9 out of 10 times, the answer is not you're here to experience the flesh or enjoy the flesh or smell a flower. You are here to learn something. There's certain parameters within this life that you have set up for yourself to attract certain catalysts, certain challenges that force you to expand yourself. And again, physicality, especially Earth at this time, is rare enough. That's a part of the reason we're so overpopulated, is because there is a high demand for wanting to squeeze the last little bit out of this, out of this timeline. Get everything out on the table.
Because this is your last chance for,
It's a very useful chance. That, even if you're a wanderer and you no longer need this to advance so much, it still is a very useful place to be of service and thus then actually advance.
Wanderers are what? You've used that?
So this is a term from the Law of One. What people would call light bringers or old souls. Or basically a being that has already gone through this third through fourth density transition. Mm-hmm. They're natively speaking beyond where humanity is at,
right.
But they choose to incarnate as an act of service most of the time, as an act of love and their own progression too.
But we're here to be the absolute, ultimately. I mean, this, when you talk about it, I get the sense everything disappears and that the form even disappears.
Well, how perceptive are you?
Well, it just touches that formlessness in
truth me. Truth recognizes truth always.
Right, so this ultimately is our beingness.
Yeah, it's not very relevant at this density, this incarnation, for most people. Mm-hmm. But it will be relevant for those that are intense seekers and that do want to utilize this lifetime to advance their native high sixth density level into union with all or beyond. So it aids to the soul. Mm-hmm. Once we reach a certain level and we transcend our sort of human conditioning sufficiently enough to become real empty recipients of why we are here and what we can induce, it's like infusing more and more purpose into this single lifespan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you complete a certain theme that was intended, you're kind of like, well, I'm still alive. What else can I use this incarnation for that I didn't really expect myself to get to? Mm-hmm. And on the other end of it, it's also like when we incarnate, higher self is not that hopeful, usually.
They don't
really have high expectations.
They don't? I would say that's the purpose of incarnating, for the going for the...
There is the hope. There's the hope. But there is the knowledge that remembrance is very... The chances of a wanderer remembering who they are rather slim.
But it's easier now, because...
It is easier now. Hopes are increasing at a higher self level.
I think so.
Yes. But it's always a risk. It's always a risk, part of the service.
It's always a risk getting lost in density. But no, but when you talk about it, and I think if you stay in that state of being, and I know that's like you're having a conversation on all these levels, but in that state, there's actually a transmission. Do you find that? Do people talk? I mean, there's great lamas who transmit that teachers.
Yeah. It's the most powerful teaching, in my opinion.
It's the transmission part.
Yeah. And I often say to people, don't focus too much on my words.
Right.
Focus on the other 99%.
Yeah, so when you're being that, there's nothing to say.
Yes, and if I allow myself to slip into that too much, it becomes physically difficult for me to speak.
It does talk about that. What do you mean? Oh, but just to speak.
It becomes difficult to speak.
So maybe we don't have to speak.
No, I'm on a roll now. This is fine. I'm activated. I'm saying if I remain in that state exclusively, like I also use my conscious attention to rest back into that state, into the true heart, true self. Like it's like that black hole. Everything just internalizes and becomes, merges with the one. And from that state, it's very...
But that's...
It requires activation, incentive, desire, passion, inspiration, or whatever. Catalyst.
I was going to say that makes great television, though. No, just going back into that. No, I mean, because it's for me in the conversation, it's the parts that aren't said.
Wonderful.
That.
How about for your viewers?
For my viewers too, it's like, what's going on there? How do I get a sense of mystery in the, like, interviewing Don Miguel? We just looked at each other for 30 minutes, and like, that was a great show.
Wonderful.
So. Anyway, I'm not telling you what to do, but it's like that level of beingness emanates for viewers. I mean, why not? Mm-hmm. There,
it does. Yeah.
I mean, so feel free to go into the black hole.
Well, the thing is, nevertheless, it transmits even when I'm speaking.
Uh-huh.
So this addresses both audiences, those that benefit from the words and those that can see deeper too. Mm.
What do your parents think of all this?
They follow, they're subscribers of my TV channel. they come to my retreats. And
do they get it? Or they say, what have we done?
I mean, who gets it, really, But
some people get it.
Some people get it, yes.
I mean...
I mean, they get certain things.
Yeah, I guess so. But I think there are wanderers that are ready to wake up.
Absolutely. That's part of my real passion at this time is to really be more available in more exclusive settings to those that really are ready. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of done parroting myself, like talking the same stuff. It's all there.
It's old news, right? You're talking to audience and say,
it's old news for me. It's old news for a lot of the people that want to move on from that. And so it's all available, you know, so people can go to that.
So what are you going to do now with these?
I'm keeping more and more quiet, and I'm doing more exclusive things that where only the people that really want of a certain thing will sign up for or attend, or some things aren't events, they're just mm-hmm. personal, private situations.
Right.
So it's a more devotional space, mm-hmm. and a less, and by devotion I mean not worshiping, but devoted, where the beings there mm-hmm. are devoted to that right. deeper sense, and it transcends the need for words and mm-hmm. Q&A, mm-hmm. and right. it's just this deep love for the truth.
I was just wondering, am I a fourth density? Because I want that, but I also love phenomena. I love, like...
Well, but you have a role to play, huh?
Yeah.
Which is part of the theme. That's why you're so passionate about it. It's part of the theme of this incarnation.
Thank you.
Doesn't necessarily mean that you're natively locked in at fourth density.
Right. Right.
It just means that this is a strong, this is your strong suit, and right. this is how you can reach a lot of people. And sometimes the intention of a sixth density being is to cause the greatest amount of benefit to mm-hmm. a third going into fourth density being. Therefore, it'll cloak itself into a blueprint that addresses almost exclusively the transition from third to fourth density. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. I get it. Nice. Talk about this level of development, cultural's technical development.
Well, it's a direct reflection of planet Earth having shifted into fourth density vibration. Like I said, all of our forms of architecture, and I don't just mean buildings, mm-hmm. I mean the way that a government is structured, the social media technology, the architecture of our civilization, how we relate to each other, what we value, these things have been forced into a more transparent platform mm-hmm. because Earth has been shifting.
Right.
So it's like this vibration of planet Earth is constantly calling forth ideas that are commensurate with a fourth density frequency and developments, and so it's pushing us along in that way. So the internet I see as a direct reflection of planet Earth's shift in frequency.
It can be a trap, though, of course, another addiction for people to distract them from
absolutely
the self.
Anything will be, like, it's inevitable. You'd have to address that person and make them aware of why they are addicted to begin with.
Right, and that's what people, that's the thing. But getting back to that other question I asked, as we come into sixth density, creation is still creating in a way that I'm fascinated with. That's my fourth density excitement. But it's because it still feels like you come to a place in the absolute where it's just still and still moving, but it's always been, and there does seem to be, and I think I asked that before, something new manifesting each minute that's unknown. Do you know what I'm saying? There's the...
Yeah. I'd comment on that by saying that, structurally speaking, nothing new can be created, mm-hmm. because from an absolute point of view, which ultimately is the only point of view, all things are timeless. So literally anything that can exist already does exist. So what's new is not so much the configuration of molecules or mm-hmm. atoms that we influence and create. Those are just, as Bashar would say, actually, those are parallel realities, mm-hmm. and we're shifting through them. Thus right. then there seems to be time and change.
Right.
So it's not that we're creating something new, because 10 years from now already exists. All configurations of 10 years from now.
But it had to be created 10 years ago. At some point it was created.
I'm saying it was created at the same time the first amoeba was created.
All at once. Boom. Yes. Everything.
Correct.
Boom.
So structurally speaking, like, this is not a couch that didn't exist yet in mm-hmm. the creator's mm-hmm. mind. It's just that the way we relate to it, this is where free will comes in. That's what's new. It's the way that we combine all the colors that already exist.
Right.
You know, it's like a painter has all the colors on their palette, mm-hmm. But it's the way they uniquely combine it and use it that causes a new reflection for the creator to know itself through. Mm.
So
it's our relationship to the mechanics of what is, the way we relate to it and wake up from it and become aware of it mm-hmm. and feel about it. And that's what generates new relationship by the one, for the one, through the one, to the one.
I don't want to ask how to jump timelines, because that's another
half. You don't desire.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to say, I know it's possible. I guess I haven't wanted it, or maybe I have and haven't recognized it, right? I
mean, yeah, exactly. Well, totally, absolutely.
Does that happen all the time?
Absolutely.
Oh, we are jumping timeline. Oh,
absolutely, yes.
Oh, okay.
All the time. and all the time in miniature ways, and then there's bigger leaps that happen too. Mm. When and at those points, they become more noticeable. But even then, they often go unnoticed. Because why does it go unnoticed? Because we explain it away linearly. We give it cause and effect. Mm. But in truth, it was a shift.
Right. How many timelines are you aware of, or is it possibly, I mean, are you now aware of how many timelines? I mean, no, I know you're here, but where do these parallels run for you?
Depends. Usually it has to do with the being that I sit with.
Oh, well, tell me. I'm here. No, tell me where my timelines are going.
It's too many to name, and it's not how you probably would expect from a linear point of view that to look.
They're not like railroad tracks.
It's like a gradient or so. Yeah. And like you could pinpoint different, many, many different inside mm-hmm. of that gradient, and they're all like parallel timelines. But so what I sense when I talk to people or when I do work or when I investigate my own, not investigate, but oversee my own life, and when new decisions and inspirations come,
yeah.
there is an awareness of the field of probabilities. Meaning, if I say this, the probable
created.
Reality that will be activated in that being, that they will shift to, like, everything is manipulation when it comes to communication and relationships.
What do you mean manipulation?
Meaning, like, I can't say a single word without manipulating what you're aware of.
Okay, and so I can't say it back, but you're correct. Not manipulatable.
In none same way, yeah. So, like any time that we open our mouth, or even before, just the way we show up, the way this is all, like, we're constantly influencing other people. Mm-hmm. We don't realize how often. We do this all the time.
And we have no a choice every minute to say this or that. Or,
correct. Yeah. So once we become aware of that, it becomes a responsibility, a duty, an honor to use that in alignment with one's true soul blueprint, which for me happens to be service to others. And it's the case for a lot of blueprints at this timing, a lot of soul. Mm-hmm. So the more aware you become of it, ironically, the more capable of consciously manipulating others you become, but simultaneously, the greater the responsibility, kind of like the Spider-Man right. one sentence, like, with great power comes great responsibility.
But if you're service to self, there's no, it's not really manipulation because service to others, sorry.
Yeah.
If you're service to others, you influence them for the highest good.
Yes, but then the journey becomes becoming aware of where you have egoic tendencies that you don't see. Or not, don't
and
see yet.
Do you
right?
feel you still have egoic tendencies? Or no one's telling you do, right?
I mean, right, someone, no, at this level, it's up to me to find these.
Well, someone could say that was ego, but you can also say that's your projection of your ego onto me. So how
correct.
Do you
yes.
get clear in if
yeah,
there is an
at
ego?
And it's a solo game.
Okay, you have to catch yourself.
There's no feedback I can use from anyone.
Because it's all point. That.
Yes.
But you do catch yourself sometimes. I mean,
it's been a while.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So the speaking, the timelines, it's a choice every minute which timeline we're going to exist in. And
correct. So in this field, beginning to see how everything is influenced by what we express, mm-hmm. you start to sense it as sort of a soup of probabilities. So then I become aware of, if I use this word, it'll activate your consciousness in that timeline. Mm-hmm. If I say that word, it'll shift you to that timeline. So it becomes this really intricate game of mirroring the other being. And you sense sort of like their denseness or where they're at or where they're assuming, what mm-hmm. their blind spots are, what mm-hmm. their assumptions are, what their biases, their beliefs are. And so you become both a match to that as well as an up-leveling from that or a counter to that.
But you're also a manifestation of their consciousness. So you're mirroring them, but you're also mirroring a part of them that wants to go down a particular path. Right? I mean, it's not just manipulate. It's like part of their soul's evolution.
Absolutely. We're talking service to others.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
it's a direct conversation. I am more in communication with people's higher selves than I ever am with their lower selves.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'd say that I'm exclusively in communication with their higher selves.
Are you talking to my higher self?
Correct.
Okay. What's my higher self saying back to you?
It's such a lower self thing, Kat.
What is it saying? What is that lower self doing there? Talk to me.
So it's very dynamic. It's very yeah. integrated in our conversation. There's
yeah.
there's no escaping it for mm-hmm. me. Like every word I say is a part of that.
Mm-hmm. When beings come in from other densities, ETs, whatever you want to call them, they are also influencing that self, but there's some part of that person that's called on that, even
correct.
If they're freaked out.
Yes.
Talk about that. Oh. What can you we kind of covered that, but you okay? What time you got now? Sorry.
It's 12:30. We rolled about an hour and 10 minutes.
Oh, let's just do another.
And we can, I'm good.
Are you good?
Yeah.
Are you enjoying it?
Yes.
I mean, the part of you that enjoys?
Yes.
Okay. No, but the interactions of these higher beings, whether they be spiritual entities, there's a upgrade, or even, you know, talking to people like you, people are asking for it, though. They're wanting that level upgrade.
They do. Exactly. So the irony is that oftentimes when I speak to people, they ask for me.
Oh, wait. Can you, one second.
Yes.
Could you see if anyone's out there? Because there were some people that were supposed to show up and just open the door. I don't know. Hold that question. How are you guys doing over there?
Great.
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Great.
Anyone? You have to push hard. It's like, see anybody? No? 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 Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, go as way out there as you can. Let's blow people's minds because, okay.
Cool.
No, so, yeah, talk about that.
So, oftentimes people will come to me and they're unaware that they're requesting to have an interaction with me. But it's obvious to me that they are requesting, their entire being is requesting that reflection.
You feel that?
I feel that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I'll feel that more of my verbal, mental, physical, emotional body in a certain way to reflect them, kind of usually somewhere in between their true potential and where they're currently at, so that it's still relatable to where they're at, but it does encourage them to wake up more. Right, so this is not,
because if you go to that true potential, the lower self will say, get away, I'm not ready for that, right?
Even if you find a middle ground, they'll still say that.
Oh.
Which is going to be my point. A lot of the times, they're asking me to say the things I say, but then they're not, they don't want to receive it mentally or consciously. But it's still received. Mm-hmm. Like,
a seed is planted.
They may not like it. The seed is planted, and that's what their higher minds wanted. And so,
just the seed.
Yes, and so they come to me. You become in high demand by higher selves because they can utilize you so clearly and so cleanly, whereas to get the same amount of benefit, they would have to transfer your body to meet with this person who has a certain bias and will say that certain thing, and then that person who has a certain bias will say that thing, because these beings are not clear empty mirrors of the message. But if you were to come to me, I can give it all to you based on how you want it tailored. So as an empty vessel, as a mirror, or even as a high level shepherd, you become greatly desired to visit by entities. And so they will usually want to hear something, but they don't want to hear it with their conscious minds.
Right.
So,
are you saying that to me now? I'm only mind.
No, you're very open. And usually it just happens organically in the interaction.
Yeah.
It's rare that it's like, tell me something about myself.
Yeah, I know. That's
like,
just,
what does my higher self want of me?
Yeah.
It doesn't quite work that way.
Because it's the lower self that's asking that question.
Yes, and the way it's going to be received is going to be inorganic, and it's going to create imbalances of its own. So I ask people to be really open for this, those that are close to me. But at the same time, when they come to me and say, you know, you can just tell me anything, right? Anything that I'm not seeing, you can tell me. They may say that. But I may not have that permission, or they may not be ready for it.
Right.
Anyway.
And then when you do say it, they say, get lost. That's not true.
That happens quite a bit, yeah. So what you learn as a shepherd, too, and maybe an encouraging note for those viewers that do relate to some of the levels I'm speaking to, is like one of the things that I had to learn is that I don't have any friends.
You don't.
Like, it's a life without friends.
Really? Because you can't say anything you want? We could be friends.
Because nobody knows you.
Right.
We can have fun, we can play, I can act with you.
Right.
But as long as you don't know what I am, there won't be any friends in that way.
Right. If I know who I am in the infinite beingness, then we can.
Then there's a confluence that happens.
We could be friends in the infinite.
I ironically don't have friends there because there's only one.
Right.
So that ultimately doesn't matter, but there's this stage where the entity that we assume we are, the mind body spirit complex, will go through a series of challenges, which is, do I want to have friends or do I want to be a mirror and of service? Because there's a lot of times where you have to choose between these two.
Well, that's a service to self. It's okay if you want to have friends, that's your service to self.
True.
But yes. And that you're allowed that, no mm-hmm. judgment.
Yeah, at your own pace, at your own time.
You have allowed to, but at some point you do have to even disconnect from everyone, I would sense, mm-hmm. because everyone's going to pull you
yes.
into some place. But
into their own world, yes.
But you're here to be a teacher mm-hmm. in that sense, so.
Yes.
Do you find yourself at a place dissolving totally into the,
mm-hmm.
and then people will show up or not, but as we move into a new culture that's a spiritualized culture, I think you'll have some friends.
I'll have co-workers.
Yeah, co-workers. But people in that space, to hold the space, because I think there's coming a time where people have to hold the space of the absolute if we're going to even go to the next level mm-hmm. vibrationally.
True.
There needs to be, 144,000 or 10 or mm-hmm. 12, whatever.
Yes.
And that will shift the vibrational realities to something unknown that we can't conceive of right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get a sense of that?
Mm-hmm.
Of the unknown?
Mm-hmm.
What are you getting?
Relatively speaking, a very exciting view, meaning that there will be a quantum leap, there will be a jump that happens, that is happening gradually, but that is going to continue to take off. And this is... So relatively speaking, meaning going into fourth density at that level of like creationism and like interaction with others, there's going to be really exciting quantum leaps that are going to happen, which we could also call the unknown, because it's mm-hmm. unknown from where we're at as a species. If you're talking about people realizing the absolute, I think that's going to be a rare thing, mm-hmm. regardless. Even if I bring that awareness more into the masses,
mm-hmm.
it will become more frequent, it'll become more of an accomplishment, but it'll still only usually be utilized by those that really have that deep yearning, that deep desire, mm. which usually come from a higher level natively mm. to begin with.
Have you met anyone at that?
I have.
You have?
I have, yes.
And did something
there was no distinction between us. And he termed it confluencing.
Uh-huh.
It was an interesting experience. It's beyond telepathy. It's beyond feeling
mm-hmm.
merged or highly connected. It's like one being. Mm-hmm. You're in the same space as one being.
Mm. We could have a workshop where the oneness came out like that with people mm-hmm. that were ready for that. I'm not ready. I still have too much to do. Too much in my mind.
I'm saying even if you set up a workshop like that, it's going to be very unlikely that
yeah,
happens.
I get it.
It's very rare at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think...
The concepts are out there.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about it. But for someone to be so beyond the state of consciousness
mm.
to where from the one, there is no distinction between the flow in that moment is... It you can't teach in a workshop. It needs
yeah.
to be native to an extent. It needs to be their own calling, and usually there's a long journey that goes.
Of course. Yeah. But I think collectively we are waking up, as you're saying, there's a great awakening.
Absolutely.
And it's very exciting on a personal level,
yeah.
fourth density level. I love it. I love to see that vision of the planet waking up and...
Yeah.
Free energy, an exchange of beingness, you know, a creative renaissance of mm-hmm. this is what I feel I want to contribute.
Wonderful.
To the play.
And
of,
you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you are.
Have you met? And I'm working within the disclosure framework, actually. I'm writing about that as a way of activating creative creativity and calling in those higher realms as a creative expression. That I'm seeking that avenue for disclosure.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bentino, for
thank you.
For your time and your service to others, for the absolute being, and wherever you're going from there,
mm-hmm.
beyond God.
Mm.
Mm. Send us a postcard.
All of creation is that postcard.
All of creation, exactly. Exactly. Thank you for spending some time here together.
Absolutely.
And how do people find you?
There is a free school online called Trinfinity Academy. So that's the word infinity with TR in front of it, TurinfinityAcademy.com. If you want to go through progressional lessons, all my events are listed. If you want to come be with me in person, go to BentinhoMassaro.com/events. I've got the most sort of cutting edge or latest of my sessions and retreats are all available on BentinhoMassaro.tv. That's kind of the channel that we're about to expand at different channels to. And that's where you'll find most of the work that is recent. And yeah, obviously on Facebook and Instagram, you can search for my name and like my pages and stuff.
Hey, this is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. Also, look me up on YouTube, youtube.com/newrealities, or email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening.